The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week of every year for more years than I care to count, we've brought you the inspiration and inspiration you need to start or grow or maybe even leave your own real estate investing business. And that latter thing is our topic today. We're going to talk about how you might think about winding down your real estate business at some point if you decide, okay, it's done its thing. Time to move on. Before we get into that topic that is honestly sort of anxiety provoking for a lot of us, just a couple of quick important announcements. The Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati holds its national online meeting tomorrow night. That is Thursday, January the 16th. The topic is 2025 market update and forecast with Mr. Rick Sharga, who, as you all know, because he's been on the show a couple of times, is the owner of CJ Patrick Company, which is a market intelligence firm that what they do, the service they provide, is they provide real estate and economic data to fish that are a lot bigger than we are to make multi-zillion dollar decisions. And it just happens that that same information about what is going on and predict to go on with inventory and prices and interest rates and all that stuff is real important to us too. We may only be making multi-$10,000 decisions, but by golly, that's our $10,000, and we need to know what to bet on this year. The way to get a link to that free online meeting is at CincinnatiREIA.com, CincinnatiREIA.com. You can simply click on it on the calendar, and it'll take you through the process, and you can get yourself a link. Also, next Wednesday, which I believe is the 22nd. I'm not looking at a calendar, but I'm pretty sure it's the 22nd, is our monthly Summit Investors Help Night brought to you by OREA and the National Real Estate Summit. We meet throughout the year to sort of just do help. Like, you know, who needs help with this? And there's never like a lecture or anything like that. It's always just we get some experts together on a particular topic. And this month, the topic is land trusts and entities. And we're going to have John Heyer there to answer questions, Scott Ellsworth and Todd Van Meter. And, any questions you have about anything around entities? I mean, even IRA questions. I mean, one of those guys is a CPA and the other one is John Heyer. So, just come and ask your questions and they will be happy to answer them. We were hoping we would have some news about the Corporate Transparency Act by now, after that flurry of it's on, it's off, it's on, it's off. We were hoping that by now there might be some more serious news, and who knows, by next week there might be. But anyway, you can also get your link to that at CincinnatiREIA.com. Just click on the calendar next Wednesday, Summit Help Night, and you'll get a link. So joining me today is Mr. Jeff Rickerman. If you recognize that name, it's because he is the past president of the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. He is also the past president of Mahoning Valley REIA up in Youngstown, Ohio. He's been doing a lot of things in real estate for a large number of years, but a couple of years ago, he decided that it was time to cash it all in and move on to the next stage of his life. And when I first heard that, it literally gave me a stomach ache. I literally thought, oh my God, am I going to have to do that someday? That sounds like a nightmare. So it seemed like maybe a good opportunity to bring Jeff on, find out why he made this decision, how it's going, how it was like he expected, how it wasn't like what he expected, and exactly how he is, quote, exiting his real estate business. Joining us from his home in northeastern Ohio is Mr. Jeff Rickerman. Jeff, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thank you, Vina. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff. I think we better start out by explaining to people what the scope of your this real estate business that you're winding down actually is, because this isn't like, oh, I'm going to sell off my five rentals. This you have had a pretty big operation going on since 2013. So talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of deals you had done, what kind of properties you have owned, so we can get just an idea of what it is you're winding down here.
Sure. So I started off doing primarily long-term rentals and had a lot of single families, some duplexes, some triplexes. Never went to the multifamily, but I really enjoy the single family rentals the most. That seems to be the most where people stay for the longest. So that was where I started off back in 2013. July of 2013 is when I bought my first house out here in Ohio. And then along that path, I ended up doing a lot of option contracts, and those option contracts were kind of my way of doing wholesaling, where I would find a deal that I thought was a great deal, and I would get an option contract on, and then I would sell that option contract to another investor. Did a lot of turnkey rentals where we would buy houses, we would fix them up and get them beautiful houses, and then we would rent them to good families, and then we would sell those houses as turnkey rentals to other investors. Mm-hmm. And then also, more so in the last 3 or 4 years, I've been doing a lot of contracting work, working for other investors, and I enjoy that work primarily because, you know, when you work on a house, you start, you say, okay, well, I've got to take out this drywall here. And the next thing you know, you're knee deep into five other things as it snowballs. And when you're doing that on your own, you're paying all that cost. When you're doing that as a contractor, you just have to call up the client and say, hey, we opened up this wall and here's what we found. So, you know, this is where we're going to go from here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I've also, I mean, I've made a lot of good relationships with the contracting as well as with the rental business. So.
Well, you just wrote my book. You just wrote my whole book called Why I Don't Do Rehabs.
Right. It's true. It's so true.
So at one point you had acquired 70 properties in 5.5 years.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a lot.
It is.
Like most people don't acquire that many properties in their entire real estate careers. And then they also don't suddenly decide, yeah, I'm done. it's time to shut all this down and go do something else. So I think that what our listeners really want to hear is why you made that decision. How you decided to shut it down, because people mean different things when they say, yeah, I'm exiting, and what that has all been like. We are going to talk about that right after we get back from this break. If you have questions for Jeff and his exiting of his real estate business, 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658, or just send an email. It's vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today about winding down a large real estate business with Mr. Jeff Rickerman, immediate past president of the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association, and for a while there, big time real estate investor up in the Youngstown, Ohio region. So, Jeff, I think the question that I know this is the first thing I said to you, and I'm guessing if other people didn't say it, they were thinking it. Why?
So, at the end of this month, I'll be 64. You know, I've and it's kind of funny the way my life's worked. I've been an employee. Is also I've had my own business. I started my own business, my first business when I was 7, and had 3 more before I was 20. And I've also been an employee, and I've worked for 3 different corporations in the corporate world, and each one of those positions lasted like 12 years, and so this has kind of lasted 12 years for me too, and that just seems, and maybe I have itchy boots or something, but this just seems like it's time to move on to the next phase of my life, and I'm not completely winding. Matter of fact, when we told my mother-in-law that I was going to talk on the radio about winding down a business, she couldn't stop laughing. She said, "No, you're not winding down. You're winding over and around." So, you know, we certainly haven't sold everything off. We're keeping some properties, but we're also getting out of the daily grind of it, you know, having to be there every day and dealing with everything every day. We're getting ourselves into a position where we can, you know, run off for a couple months here or there, you know, go explore the world, whatever we want to do.
Okay, so it was basically just I live my life in 12-year cycles, and the 12-year cycle has ended. Okay.
Yeah. It's time to do something new. Yeah.
Fair enough. I think actually that an important thing that I would like listeners to take away from today is don't wait too long before you figure out how you're going to get out if your life changes in some major way.
Yes.
Because, and I've told this story many times, but the mistake that my father made was thinking that he would always be healthy enough and always be mentally there enough to continue to run a great big giant real estate business. And he made zero plans for what would happen if that was not true anymore. And because he made zero plans and he had a great big portfolio of properties, when he became unable to run them anymore, effectively there was no stepping in at that point and fixing it, because he just like even when he knew he was sick, he didn't let go of it. And like the best thing that he could have done for my mother would have been to 10 years before any of this happened, write out something that said, if anything ever happens to me, here's what you do. And he didn't do that.
And you can't turn it on a dime. I mean, you can't. It takes a lot of time to make changes.
Yeah, it really does. So, I know you had been like planning this before you actually started executing it. How long did it take you to make the plan? And did you consult with anybody, like financial advisors, anybody like that, as you were making the plan?
So definitely talk to my accountant about it. But I think even more importantly, so to answer your first question, it's been 2.5 years that I've been talking about doing this. And I think one of the most important parts about doing this is I told everyone I knew that I was doing this. That was my first move. Mm-hmm. And I went and talked to all the people that I respected and admired, including you, about thoughts on this. And I think that, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to get opinions from other people. You should gladly hear opinions. I know a lot of people out there are scared to hear someone else's opinions, but you should welcome them. And you take all that information, you put it together, and you come up with a plan that is not just yours, but is born from many different great minds. And so, yeah, it's been 2.5 years. I've been talking about it, getting opinions on it, and working the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't enough time. I really needed another half year, but I already committed to it, so I'm here.
Got it. So there are a lot of ways. Like if I said, well, I am winding down my business, that could mean a lot of things. You know, like I know what a lot of people do, or their plan is to do, is they're going to turn their rentals into paper by selling them on, you know, some kind of owner financing to the tenants or to other investors. And some people mean literally, nope, I'm selling everything. Like every scrap, every stick I'm selling. How are you going about this?
So we've turned a lot of properties into paper, as you mentioned, not necessarily to the tenants. So the tenants we've had who've been long-term, we've offered them. Only a couple of them have even seemed interested in it. They seem more interested in sticking with the rental.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is we've turned these into papers with other investors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that we people that we know well, that we've built relationships with over the years, and people that we trust, and, you know, and that gives us a monthly payment.
Mm-hmm.
And takes the day-to-day management and headache away.
Okay. And I assume it was easy to shut down the contracting part and the flipping part. You just, like, don't do that anymore.
Yeah. I'm still doing contracting right now, but yeah, at the end of this month, I should be kind of out of that.
Okay. So why that particular way? I mean, we've been up until recently, we've been in one of the hottest markets in anybody's memory. Sure. Why not just sell everything?
Well, and this is one of the reasons. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, I've been doing this throughout my 12 years. I've been doing this, is buying houses and selling them. So it's nothing unusual in our business mode is to keep doing the same thing. And we've just been selling more of them off in the last few years. But trying to spread that throughout the years. So, you know, I don't want to sell everything in 1 year. That would be so painful, tax-wise, that is, to do that in 1 year. And also, I don't, you know, so one of the strategies I've used to do this is I just have a houses for sale list. And I have a bunch of different investors who I have their email address. And, you know, every couple of months, I update that list and I send it out to them. And then maybe someone will call me and say, hey, I'm interested in this house, or I'm interested in this house. I know I talked to some people and they said, well, pick out your best 10 houses and keep them. I've more just done this by faith and put the list out there, and whatever people, you know, I put my prices on there. I've worked hard to figure out fair, equitable prices that help me out and that help other investors out, and put the list out there, and people have been buying the houses. And so I'm grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, and I know this will change over the next 6 months, but at this point, what is your ratio of houses I own to houses I used to own, but now I have notes?
Probably 60%. Probably we're down by probably 60% from what we owned 3 years ago.
Okay. And are you going to keep any of the houses the way they are, or are you going to turn them all ultimately into notes?
I would like to keep 10 to 15 houses. Mm-hmm. You know, I respect and admire John Schwab. I really enjoy listening to him speak. And one of the things that he always talks about is if you have 10 free and clear houses in nice neighborhoods, and you rent them out to nice families, then you're set for life. And I believe that's true.
Mm-hmm. So I gather the 10 to 15 you're planning on keeping are not trash.
That's correct, yeah. Well, we really tried not to buy trash houses. I mean, anything that we really weren't that interested in, we would option off.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But yeah.
Uh-huh. And
yeah, these are.
Are you trying to have those 10 to 15 free and clear?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that, I assume, lets you take the step of hiring a property manager.
I haven't pushed it that far yet. I mean, I'm one of those knuckleheaded people who thinks they need to do it themselves. And as far as and one of the most important things that we haven't talked about is the relationship you have with people, having a community. You know, as you talked about, you know, being president of the OREA as well as Mahoning Valley OREA, and building relationships with people and having boots on the ground who can help you out with stuff. And, like, you know, so if someone has a problem, well, let me back up one step. So if you've rehabbed the house nicely and you put good folks in that house, your maintenance calls are few and far between. And then when you do have a maintenance call, your phone rings wherever you are. I mean, I don't have a problem answering the phone. That's never bothered me. And then I just call someone up and say, hey, can you go over and replace this hot water heater for me? And they do, and we send them a check. And that's my plan at this moment. We'll see. I mean, maybe we'll need to talk in another year, and we'll see how this has all mm-hmm. worked so far.
No, that's actually really interesting, because I've known a lot of people that have done the John Schaub, let me have, you know, 15, 20, whatever the number is for them, paid off properties, and then I'm going to move to someplace warmer than Youngstown, Ohio, like permanently, like for the rest of my life. And I will hire a property manager at that point. And your attitude of, I don't really need a property manager because I have good contractors, and if it really came to it, and the fire department called me and said, yeah, we just put out a fire in your house, I could call one of the members of my RIA that I've built relationships over the year and say, will you please go take a look and take pictures and let me know what's going on over there? You don't
yes.
need a property manager for that.
Right.
That's an important little lesson right there, folks. I hope you heard that. There's reasons to build relationships other than just, I need money right now. Jeff, we're going to take a quick break, after which we are going to answer some questions that we have gotten from listeners at vinaradio@gmail.com. If anybody has a question, vinaradio@gmail.com, or you can just do it the direct way. Give us a call at 877-772-9658. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guest today is Jeff Rickerman, who is doing something that I think all of us kind of know that we're going to have to do at some point in time, unless something terrible happens, and yet we don't really think about it or plan it out as well as we should. And Jeff has spent 2.5 years planning, committing to, and now implementing a plan to wind down his very active real estate business into something that allows him to be, you know, truly passive, hands off, be elsewhere in the world and not have to worry about running over to a house to fix a frozen pipe in the middle of the night. If you have questions, 877-772-9658, or send them to vinaradio@gmail.com, as Russell Kinney did. Russell says, thank you for all you do and having Jeff join us today. Some questions. Vina, I recall you mentioning that there were many properties in your portfolio that you were very smart and wise to sell well before the 2008 downturn, and that you have added since. Russell, I love you, dude, but you never heard me say that. I mean, everybody saw a downturn coming in 2008, but I didn't like proactively go, oh, I'm going to sell all these properties because they were at the top of the market. And now look at all this cash I have now that properties are $10,000. I wish that that were the case. I think the only thing that I've said that was anything like that was that the only properties I've ever regretted buying were the ones I bought in 2005 and 2006, many of which I still own. And that I regret having not kept more of the properties that I bought early on, that I flipped a lot of them or lease optioned them and they ended up selling. But I understand that, he says, I understand that some reasons to sell may be a great offer price, signs that a downturn is coming, a good opportunity to sell higher and then buy again when values are lower. Are there any other reasons to unload in addition to not having as much energy to operate them, wanting to have more quality of life with family, et cetera? Is this scenario similar to Jeff's background as an owner as well? Anything to share there? So, Jeff, you had talked about you've kind of consistently kept a list of properties that you would be willing to sell.
Correct.
And this was before this, you know, before you decided, no, this is... it, I'm going to go do something else.
Right about the same time. I mean, a little bit before, maybe 6 months before. But
okay.
I mean, before that, it was just I would have people come to me and say, hey, what do you have for sale? And I didn't really have a list going at that point.
Ah, but you were willing, you weren't like emotionally attached to your houses.
Oh, so one of my creeds in my life, it has been my entire life, is everything I own is for sale. That's one of the ways I've lived my life.
Yeah, so I mean,
no emotional attachment, not even to my personal home.
There are other reasons that you would sell a particular property or even a particular group of properties other than I'm, you know, retiring. And the one that jumps to my mind first is I have had during the course of my life probably 4 or 5 houses that it didn't matter what I did, they just didn't work. They worked on paper.
Right.
Like it looked like they should be making all kinds of money, but just a series of things would happen with that house Bad tenants, kitchen fires, you know, and it would be the same house over and over and over again. And I called those haunted houses. Because, like they could not... I bought them at the right price. I did everything I did with all the other houses. I tried to manage it right. I tried to put the right people in them. And for some reason, they just didn't work. And I learned after about 10 years of that to not throw in good money out after bad. Not say, well, three things have happened, so it's not going to happen again. Just sell it. Because it's never going to end.
And I would also say another reason might be, let's say you speculated on a neighborhood, you think it's up and coming, and then it looks like it's going the other direction. It might be a good idea to sell that house before it goes too far in the other direction.
Yep, stuff that doesn't fit with the rest of your portfolio.
Uh-huh.
The things that I owned, that I bought from like 1990 to, I don't know, probably 2003, 2004, 2005. Most of that is gone out of my portfolio now because I made the conscious decision to stop buying stuff because it was cheap and start buying it because it was good. And
right.
I think a lot of people when they first start, and there's nothing wrong with this. I mean, do not hear me to be saying don't do this, but a lot of people when they first start, they're buying stuff in C minus areas because you can get it cheap. You can do the work yourself. You can rent it for a lot compared to what the property, you know, what you paid for the property. But those properties also tend to come with more management drama than a house like in a B-plus area that you think you can't afford because, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to take out in Cincinnati, that might be a $250,000 mortgage, $350,000 mortgage. And, you know, I liked my Class C houses. They did make me good money and support me for a really long time. But as time has passed and I made the decision, what I want to buy going forward is this other kind of property. Then once I started to get those, I started to sell the other ones so that I could get more of the ones I wanted. And I think
I think another along that same line, another thing to keep in mind is unless you really enjoy rehabbing houses and you're really good at it, if you have a house... if you have two houses on the same block and one's selling for $90,000 and that $90,000 house is completely rehabbed and ready for someone to move into, but next door there's a house that's selling for $40,000, but you know right off you got to put $40,000 into it, I think the wiser move is buying the $90,000 house. Because that $80,000 you think you're going to spend on is probably going to become
$100,000. Mm-hmm. Yes, and also there are $90,000 rehabbed houses that are available with like owner financing, and that like if you have to pay $95,000 for that fully rehabbed house, but you get owner financing,
right?
That's the one to buy, right? So, lots of reasons to trade around properties and to not get attached to them. I did sell the very first property I ever bought in 2022. And I will say I was a little attached to that one. It was my first house. And so I did wait a really long time to sell that one. But the new owner who lives there is very happy with that. So question from Cameron, who's here in Cincinnati. He says, aren't the tax consequences of all of this pretty severe? I understand that even if you do an installment sale, you owe the gains on the, you owe the gains and the depreciate, or sorry, you owe the depreciation recapture immediately. So in other words, you have a house that you paid 10 grand for in 2013. You just sold it with a note for 80. You've completely depreciated it, probably, because you only paid 10 for it in the first place. Do you have to recapture that depreciation this year?
So yes, that's true. You pay the full recapture depreciation. Now you're depreciating over 27 and a half years. So unless you've owned that house for 27 and a half years, you haven't fully depreciated it. But yes, the year of the sale, you pay the full recapture depreciation. So yeah, the tax consequences are strong. And, you know, one of the things like we had one investor that in December, a month ago bought five houses from us, and when we were talking about terms, one of the agreements he made is that he would pay cash for two of those houses. We financed three of them and took cash for two of them, and that cash is to pay taxes in April.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's, what can you say? I mean, I think I'm doing my part to support this great nation of ours.
I'm going to add on to that question a little bit, because a lot of people seem to think that, like, if you sell a house and you carry payments, that avoids the capital gains part of the tax. And we're talking about the depreciation recapture, but they think it avoids capital gains, and it doesn't. It just spreads it out. Like, you get to pay the capital gains as you get the principal.
That's correct. Yes.
But
so
then,
you've got two things going on there. You have one, you know, like you said, the recapture depreciation, you're paying that all that year. The capital gains, and then, of course, you're doing interest payments, and so you're making money off that interest. So the capital gains and the interest are what you collected for that year
mm-hmm.
to pay taxes
mm-hmm.
on.
However, I think what most people don't quite realize, and this happened to me this year, I had a note that I had noted out a property to an investor for 20 years, and I was like, she'll be crazy to pay that off. It's a 20-year loan. It fully amortizes. And she paid it off 15 years early this year. And then I had to pay all of the capital gains on the house because the note paid off. On the ones you've noted out, have you done a full, like if I buy it, I get to keep making you payments until it's paid off, or are there balloons in these notes?
So we've been doing it a few different ways, and we've actually done opposite recently. But yeah, so one of the things we've done is we put a term in there that they can pay off the house anytime they want. However, they're still obligated to pay us a certain number of months of payments. So if they want to pay it off early, when they pay it off, they owe us that
prepayment penalty. That's what they call those in the loan world. And by the way, listeners, he's able to do that because he's selling to investors. You cannot.
Right. It's my LLC to their LLC. Correct.
Yeah, you cannot do that with a homeowner that you're carrying financing for.
But more recently, what we've actually been doing is we've been putting calls into our mortgages where, okay, we'll give you a 10-year mortgage. However, we have the right to call this mortgage in, let's say, 3 years. And if we call the mortgage in 3 years, we provide you with written notice, and you have 6 months to pay it off after we provide you with written notice.
Mm.
In case we decide, hey, you know, we need a little more money coming in, mm-hmm. Let's get this mortgage paid off now.
We need to cash out the mortgage. Well, you know, you could also just sell the mortgage, Jeff. There's people who just buy the mortgage from you.
Well, I went down that whole road, and you're not getting 100% on that.
It depends on the buyer and the rate on the
right,
mortgage.
Yeah.
Like anything around like 8% that's been paying for 3 years, you can find a buyer at full face value
right.
for that. So,
yeah.
All right, we got a couple more questions from listeners, but we do need to take one more quick break. If you have any questions for Jeff about his winding down of his real estate business, 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Having today what I hope is a useful conversation to a lot of you about how does one go about winding down a real estate business that at one point was flips and wholesale deals and rental properties and a contracting business, and how all that might work. So, Jeffrey, was there anything that surprised you about this process? Like you thought it's gonna go just like this, but no, it turns out it takes longer to do this, or this went quicker, or anything like that?
So one of the things that has been a challenge for us, and that's been more recently, is figuring out the whole banking aspect. If you're not there in your local community with your local bank, how do you make transactions happen? How do you make wires happen?
Mm.
And we had to do a lot of shifting around to be able to remotely wire funds. One of the things our business also does is we do lending. And so, you know, we need that ability to be able to remotely wire money. And with the bank we had, which we loved that bank, they didn't offer that ability. So we had to switch up some accounts. So I guess another thing is, we talked about calling people and having them do contracting work for you. But one of the challenges I've had is getting the little things done, like getting the mail picked up from the P.O. box, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you know, the post office will scan your mail for you and send it to you.
Right. You're right. Yep. Well, they scan the envelope. I don't think they scan the inside of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if it's one of those commercial PO boxes that they will actually open it for you and scan it for you. So, and it is always this kind of little detail that you just don't even think about it. Like who would have thought? Oh well, if I'm going to be in Hawaii and I need to wire some money for a lending deal, my bank won't do it because I'm in Hawaii. You know, who would have thought?
Well, and it was kind of crazy because we talked to the bank and we love this bank because they gave us great interest. But then they're like, okay, yeah, we can do remote wiring, but you have to apply for it, and then we have to mail you, snail mail you, not email you, but snail mail you a special code to send the wire with. And by the way, we have to send that to the address on record. We can't send out to address you give us.
Okay, so what's
so,
the
okay,
point?
Well, what's the, what, exactly.
Oh, my so. Goodness. Oh, my goodness. All right. Question from Danny in Cincinnati. She says, knowing what you know now, is there anything that you would have done differently at the beginning of your investment journey?
I think I would have worked harder at planning the end. So, you know, you get really busy in the business of the business and taking care, doing the deals and taking care of everything, making sure, you know, as an investor, you have so many balls in the air at one time. And it's really crazy and it's really hectic. And you really don't think about your exit strategy and how you're going to do that. And, you know, how to optimize that on taxes and how to get the best values on your properties.
Mm-hmm.
So I think more planning. I think at the beginning, you should be planning that,
mm-hmm.
no matter how far away that is. You should always have that in mind.
Excellent. Question from JC in Las Vegas. What was your decision-making process about which properties to carry paper on, which to sell for cash, and which to hold on to?
Well, we really didn't have a decision-making process on it. We left it up to fate. We put the list out there, and people told us what houses they wanted to buy, and that's the houses we sold. So, you know, I feel like it's not like we have houses that are hugely on one side of the scale and hugely on the other. So, like we didn't have these houses that are terrible houses and these other houses that were great houses. We've consistently tried to buy really good houses all along. So there are probably a couple houses that are sold that I probably in hindsight would have said, okay, well, let's not sell that house. I mean, anybody's been watching the market since 2013, you've seen what's happened to it. It's been crazy. I mean, when I started buying houses in 13, you could pick up a pretty nice house. Now these houses needed rehabbing, but a nice house for $10,000 or $15,000. Now you can't touch that house for $60,000 or $70,000,
mm-hmm. and that's Youngstown prices, by the way.
That's
if you,
yes.
You put that in California, yeah. You're talking about $150,000 house,
yeah.
That is now a $950,000 house.
Right.
And he, JC, has a second question. What do you plan to do for income with any cash that comes because of an early note payoff, so that you can continue your retirement goals?
I would lend that money out.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I would do hard money lending with those funds.
And a question from Randy in California. He says, Jeffrey, what is your next step in the journey? I'm guessing your success is very much attributable to the challenges and accomplishments that go hand in hand with continuing improvement and looking back at positive results. What is going to fill that void now?
That's a really good question because I don't know the answer to it. We're planning on doing some traveling. Here, actually, starting in the beginning of February, we're going to start doing some traveling for a few months, and we're going to probably be looking at investment properties along the way. and, you know, keeping the business going and keeping the other business opportunities, you know, like the lending going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel very comfortable in heading out with an open mind, and an open heart to receive what comes along to me. And, you know, I think that if you have that attitude, the sky's the limit. I am absolutely not retiring. I will never retire. I will always be working in the business. But it's just a change of zip code and a change of pace.
See, that was the mic drop line for your future TED Talk.
Oh, okay.
I feel very comfortable heading into my future with an open mind and an open heart. Like that. So when you do your TED Talk, that's the last line right there. Todd just wanted to let folks know there's a misunderstanding about depreciation recapture when you use a Section 453 installment sale. If you only took straight line depreciation, that can be deferred along with the capital gains when doing an installment sale. In some cases, even accelerated depreciation can be deferred depending on how long you have the property. Your tax strategist should analyze your specific situation. So, Jeff, I'm going to ask you the last question that was on my list, even though we didn't quite get to all of the questions that were on my list. How has this process been for you, sort of like psychologically and emotionally? Because you have been very involved in and very well known in the real estate community here in Ohio for 12 years. And it feels a little bit like by doing all this traveling and not being around and whatnot, you're kind of exiting your community along with your business. Has that been difficult at all?
It is difficult. It's certainly a change. It's challenging. I mean, I always welcome new things and meeting new people, but I certainly don't plan on losing any of those friendships I currently have. I mean, I don't plan on disappearing. I plan on staying in touch with folks and, you know, attending as many RIA meetings as I can,
mm-hmm.
and staying involved as I possibly can. But yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, I feel very blessed, it's been a really fast paced, crazy 12 years, and I've been really excited. I mean, I've super enjoyed the whole time. I've super enjoyed the people I've met, the relationships I've built. That's what's so important is the people you know. That's more important than anything else is building those relationships and having those people you can do business with, having those people you can talk to, having those people you can bounce ideas off of. So yeah, I'm gonna miss that, but I'm hoping that I'm not going to go too far away from that where it's not available to me still.
So what's immediately next for you? Where are you going first?
We're going overseas for the next 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to England, and then we're going to Greece, and we're going to think about buying some Airbnbs in Greece. We'll see.
Mm.
We're going to explore around, and we've got to talk to an attorney, and it's kind of like a brand new start. We got to, you know, go out there and do recon and see what's out there and see if, I mean, we've been, my wife Jackie, she's wonderful about finding properties. Matter of fact, we just bought a new house this week. And it's not in Ohio. It's in the United States, but it's not in Ohio. It's on a lake. And we're really excited about getting moved into our new house and getting that one rehabbed. It's, you know, it's a rehab, of course.
Uh-huh.
What else would it be?
Of course. Some habits
die hard. Right. We're real excited about that. Excited about, you know, exploring the new opportunities.
Excellent. All right, Jeff. Thank you so much for sharing your adventures in winding down. Listeners, remember the Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati National Online Meeting is tomorrow night. Rick Sharga talking about what the numbers are telling us about what's going to happen in 2025. Get your link at CincinnatiRIA.com. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.